Science Faction is meant for an adult audience. All likeness to persons living or dead are the result of purposeful slander.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello! Oh, and welcome to Science Faction 306, Science Faction, the origin of psychology.
Psychology, that is one of the sciences that we give a lot of shit to on this show.
That is true.
It has no credibility. It's like, I call BS. It has no credibility.
No, Damien, how dare you? First of all, psychology is the basis for how we understand how our mind works. It's very important. It's helped out a lot of people, similar to I call BS.
You are lucky that I grace this studio with my presence. And it's not just because I'm incredibly replaceable.
Incredibly.
And I know that.
This is the science of the study of behavior and the mind, but not necessarily the underlying neurophysiology, which is the domain of neurology. So say, you know, if we're talking about what parts of the brain do different things, that is a different thing from psychology. Basically, this studies how our mind and personality work or sometimes fail to work. It could involve the study of our perceptions, reactions, what we're interested in, our sexual attractions, or underlying disorders that affect all of the elements of our lives. So, Damien, we could investigate your bizarre sexual proclivities.
Well, I mean, like, Freud has the mother stuff, but mm-hmm. I mean, all that, he never talked about animals. Did Erikson?
That's get true. You have a weird attraction to rabbits and sheep.
But that's really more of a persona that I get into for the show, and I just don't get out of it after we record the show.
Yeah, that's true. So the show has created a monster.
I was a normal kid. I was an Eagle Scout before we started recording.
What's happened to all these rabbits and sheep?
I think I know who brings up all those dolphin rape cases.
Yeah.
I'm the one emailing, hey, Bobby, got this story.
Or as Damien puts it, consensual dolphin encounters.
They're intelligent enough to consent.
Also, psychology is the best way to get the government to pay for you to fuck with random people who volunteer for studies, usually college students. People often think of Freud as the godfather of psychology, but humans have actually been studying the workings and malfunctions of the mind for far longer, since at least back to the ancient Greeks, probably longer than that. In the same way that the Western intellectual tradition was greatly influenced by Christianity, much of the Eastern traditions were influenced by Hinduism and Buddhism. So there was also a lot of study of the idea of the mind and inner psychological workings and that kind of qualia aspect in places like India and China a long time ago as well.
Are you saying that in some way Freud ripped off some of his work from the works of Oedipus Rex?
It's interesting that you bring that up. I guess in a way he kind of does. But I mean, he doesn't rip it off. He names it at the Oedipal complex.
Instead of poking out your eyes, it's much better if you do cocaine. Yeah, let your dad know you're into your mom. Just say fuck it to old man.
Because of that whole Eastern tradition, there was some really interesting proto-psychology going on both in India and China for basically like 2,000 years because of that introspection aspect of both Hinduism and Buddhism. With the Enlightenment, the Western tradition saw catching up to the investigation of inner workings of the mind in the 18th century. That got brought in a lot by philosophers like Kant, who would ask questions about what that meant to be and what it meant to exist and what it meant to think of something. And then you have things, you know, like famous Descartes lines, I think, therefore I am. The only thing I can be sure of is that I exist, you know, that weird solipsistic argument. In a sense, that is a proto-psychological argument or idea he's putting forth.
I know a lot of the psychologists you named except for Kant. If it wasn't in context, I would assume you're just being negative in a British accent.
Kant?
I can't.
Oh. You're being a real Kant right now, Damien.
Really masking them C-words in there.
But basically that led in the Western tradition to using broader scientific principles to study the mind starting in the early 19th century, particularly in Austria and Germany, with early researchers like Helmholtz, Wundt, and Fechner. All three of which, by the way, sound like a weird German sex move. Like, I gave her a good Fechner.
Sounds like a horrific Grimm's tale to me, but...
You would say that. You're loaded with Wundts.
Ein Bastard.
From there, the field branched out into things like structuralists. So basically, we have a branching of the field at some point, and people start going in different directions. You have the structuralists who sought to analyze each individual aspect of the mind, gestaltists who sought to do the opposite and look at the mind functioning as a whole, you know, emergent properties. You had behavioralists who were concerned with the physiological responses to stimuli. We all know the famous Pavlovian dog story. Cognitive psychologists who are concerned with mental states and processing, social psychologists who see psychology as an element of how we think about other people and our own relation to them, and plenty of other subdisciplines. I mean, even right now to this day, it's not like psychology is one field and you have one unified idea of how you treat somebody with certain mental disorders. There's a lot of different subsets and schools of psychology that will tell you, oh, you've got a person with this problem, here is how you treat it. And the exact same problem, that exact same person, would be treated in a different way by a different school of psychology. So what Freud did bring, while he didn't necessarily invent psychology, was...
an 8-ball of Coke to the party.
He definitely did. He did like to cure things with Coke, which is, you know, why he was a fun dude to hang out with. Also, what he was popular in pioneering was psychoanalysis, which sought to analyze the problems that people had and treat them. Side note, we now know that the vast majority of things Freud thought about the mind and how to treat it were completely wrong. He had horrible methodologies. He picked a very narrow subset of samples of like certain middle-class Victorian women. Like, he had a whole bunch of problems, and then he extrapolated a bunch of his own weird shit onto it. So most of what he came up with is bullshit, but the broader idea of psychoanalysis is obviously not bullshit and very popular.
I actually kind of think that he might have been like an Andy Kaufman-esque guy. This guy went up on stage and said, everybody in this room is attracted to their mother. And because he had enough people...
Everybody followed him?
Because everybody was willing to say the emperor had no clothes. Like, no, I don't want to fuck my mom. Not one person stood up and said,
that's interesting.
You're full of shit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then I heard he wrestled a bunch of women on stage. And then he faked his own death and became Bill Hicks.
He went forward in time, wrote The Great Gatsby.
I mean, it's interesting because... he was wrong about a lot. His entire idea of interpreting dreams to figure out what you're thinking is now basically phrenology 2.0. Like, it's complete bullshit, and that was half of what he did. A lot of his ideas...
somebody with the brain pain of a stagecoach right. would say something like that.
A lot of his crazy ideas of what certain things meant, what certain attractions meant, bringing everything back to certain sexual situations were total bullshit. Like, if you were to go back in time and meet Freud with a modern-day knowledge of psychology and look at it, it would be almost like a modern chemist going back and talking to an alchemist from the 14th century. You know, it would be, you're wrong on almost everything, but you do have the general principle that things are small and they're, you can kind of change them into other things, but you'll never make anything into gold.
How do you think Dr. Phil would have done if we had a time machine?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that he could have...
He would have done a shitload better than Freud. But I mean, that's not saying much. Again, like, Freud is just wrong about so many things. And you could give him the excuse that, you know, he was pioneering a new field. So, of course, he had to, you know, break a few eggs to get what he had to get. But
Isaac Newton.
It's always funny to me when people be like, well, if you listen to what Freud said about this, it's like, don't ever listen to what Freud said. Like, go find somebody modern who's actually done some real research with some good statistics and go and follow them.
Okay, who do you rank better on a scale of person who accomplished a lot in science, has a lot of respect, but certainly you should never listen to? Jane Goodall or Sigmund Freud?
Freud, because you don't encounter chimps that often. Like that, and she was good on the chimps. Like, what she studied, she was good on. She was just bad about her whole Bigfoot thing. But
Freud was big into Loch Ness, though. I saw it, bro.
Modern psychology has many different schools and trends, including very successful models like cognitive behavioral therapy, which has helped a lot of people basically get over certain issues that they have, as well as just general talk therapy and pharmaceutical prescriptions, which are usually done by a psychiatrist, which are very important. They get talked down a lot. A lot of people will say, oh, we're trying to medicate everybody out of their problems. That can certainly be true, and it is a valid criticism. But also, there are a lot of people who just need their fucking meds. Talk to a schizophrenic. They need their meds. And it's a good thing we have somebody prescribing them for them.
Have you ever met somebody with severe bipolar disorder? I don't care how much it takes you down. For the sake of everybody around you, we will spoon feed you these goddamn pills.
Psychology, though, happens to also be particularly susceptible to false positives in research, and it seems to be disproportionately affected by the replication crisis, which we've talked about a lot, meaning that a huge percentage of even very, very well-done, well-reported, you know, gold class journal psychology studies cannot be replicated when people try it. So we've talked about the replication crisis before. This has been a problem in basically all the sciences, started to come to light in about 2016, even in things like physics, which we consider a hard science, but it strikes super hard at things like psychology. There's a lot of possible reasons for that, including the vast variation in human beings. If you're studying physics, the forces are the same no matter what, right? But if you're studying people, you can have weird different histories, weird different pasts. Maybe even that same person will get two different scores on that psychology test based on how they feel that particular day. And so it is particularly susceptible not only to the replication crisis, but also kind of to bullshit. Like, it's really easy for people to unintentionally influence others. So you have to be really careful about double-blinding psychology experiments. If you think about it, you bring somebody in for an experiment, Did you guys ever participate in a psychology undergrad experiment?
Yeah, they had a social science experiment laboratory at Caltech, and I would do those all the time and make like $20 a pop.
Oh, really? Yeah. They didn't even pay me. We had to. As part of like our major, you had to sign up for a few. I didn't even get fucking paid. But you go in there knowing somebody's doing an experiment on you, and that changes how you act. Like occasionally they'll do something where they're watching the lobby of a building or something. The problem is it's really hard to get things like that past IRB boards because those people aren't consenting. And so most of the time they're done on college students. Well, one, you already have a weird subset. You have college students. That is, you know, a certain age, a certain demographic of socioeconomic status, of intelligence, of everything else. But then you add to the fact that I walked into that building knowing they were doing a psychology experiment on me. That changes the way I act. You are now measuring how I act knowing that particular fact. So it's hard to extrapolate broader psychological principles from it. It's almost like saying, how would you act in this situation? And we'll tell by seeing how you act in this game. Well, it's a fucking game. I'm not going to die in it. I'm not going to lose my house or have my wife divorce me. So I'm going to act differently in a board game than I am going to in real life.
Just because of your paranoid nature, every time you did sign up for an experiment, as soon as you walked in the building, you just stare at people. Stop analyzing me!
No, I'll tell you what I did do, though, is because I'm the guy who's always trying to figure out what the twist is in the M. Night Shyamalan movie. Like, I'm trying to figure it out beforehand. That's just part of my personality. And so the entire time I'm there, I'm trying to diagnose what it is they're trying to diagnose about me. And I know that they have things set up in place to make it hard for me to know what it is or to think they're looking at something else. And because of that, I'm always trying to analyze what it is they want to find. And in doing so, I'm undoubtedly fucking up their experiment. Because again, I'm not acting like I normally would.
Like many scientists, I enjoy throwing shade on psychology since it's one of the softer ones.
Uh-huh. It is a flaccid-ass science.
It's still, you know, really critical for science as a whole to just recognize that the people doing science, humans, mm-hmm. are subject to all the psychological biases and cognitive biases and weird things going on in our head. And a lot of science is just being aware of that and making sure we're not tricking ourselves and having extra skepticism and double-blinding things so that our wishful thinking doesn't predispose us to get an incorrect outcome. And it's really essential in all fields to do this.
And think about it. Like if we're studying pharmaceutical effects or even medical treatment effects, right, we do double-blinded studies. Then that's where neither the person getting the treatment nor the person administering the treatment knows whether or not they're getting a treatment or a placebo. That entire idea comes from psychology. We needed the psychological background to say, hey, look, we have this thing where we kind of make up effects in our heads, and therefore we need this placebo to control things. And by the way, last year we talked about a really interesting study that showed that placebo does not affect all people equally, and therefore might be another confounding factor. There's a study from psychology that might affect how we look at other studies from different science fields.
Are there parts of psychology that are more flaccid than others? Like I imagine like quantum psychology would be very accurate.
You and Deepak Chopra sitting in a room?
No. This is hard stuff. This is the science of analyzing the psychology of people who leap from body to body trying to find the body that they originally
leaped
from.
Sorry, it's you and Scott Bakula doing it.
In number of one. Because we don't count Ziggy. A lot of old TV. Am I going to lose a point for this next week at ICLBS for having a quantum leap reference? Damien's, I need to know now.
No, there is no such thing as that. Now you're just making up hilarious fake rules. All right. Yeah, so maybe it is the fact that it's a soft science that makes it so susceptible to the replication crisis. Maybe it's because psychological studies are inherently difficult because of that very nature of humans and their minds. Or maybe it's because we no longer shock people hard enough to get the truth out of them, which we absolutely need to start doing more. But regardless, psychology is a huge field. It is actually quite interesting. I was really interested in it in college. I thought it opened a lot of interesting doors for me to look at how people's minds and brains work. And I think to this day, one of the things that I will still research on my own, because I think it's really, really interesting, is psychological and personality disorders. Because I'll tell you what, the world makes a lot more sense once you understand what bipolar is. The world makes a lot more sense once you understand, especially in the current political climate, what malignant narcissistic personality disorder is. Like, the world makes a lot more sense when you start understanding that people run different software and firmware in their heads, and that once you kind of see what's going, it's almost like seeing the Matrix at one point when you look and you're like, oh, you're just a flawed individual who didn't get enough attention from their father, and so you're constantly acting out for male attention. This makes so much more sense to me now.
Pay attention to me, Bobby. Dad, I mean Bobby.
But the last thing I want to do is encourage you to go look up more information about psychology yourself. You absolutely shouldn't ever do that. In fact, I am forbidding you from researching psychology from now on.
Nobody tells me what to do, Dad. I mean, Bobby.
All right, and speaking of your dad, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy, and with me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great. Kind of pumped that this was the episode about psychology. I was always a big Frasier fan.
Yeah, I thought you were more of a Niles guy.
I hooked up with David Hyde Pierce at a party once.
And the David Hyde Pierce of this show, our scientist for the afternoon, Dr. Troy. Dr. Troy, how you doing?
Doing good. I'm still nursing a relaxed psychological state after I got back from a Hawaiian conference last week, and my body may be racked by UV damage, but it's totally worth the future cancer.
Dr. Troy, it should be noted, is the I Call BS super champ, one of the only people to have, actually the only scientist to have ever read and known all four articles before we have done it. In fact, I think that has happened once, and then the other time it was like you read three, but you got them all right anyway. Dr. Troy is basically the LeBron James and Michael Jordan mixed together of I Call BS, and unfortunately, he'll be playing against the fat kid from the Sandlot movie, who is Damian.
I am wearing baseball gear and standing in a soccer goal because I'm that afraid of the shots coming my way. But how dare you, after last week, come in and ignore the crimes against humanity? You know what? Fans, go back and listen to the last two I Call BS if you want to see the depths of villainy.
You're killing me, Smalls. All right, and and of course, go ahead and check out our website at www.thescienceFaction.com for all your articles we cover here, as well as some we haven't gotten to. And for all of our San Diego or San Diego adjacent listeners, I am very proud to announce that I will be starting to do a new monthly show, or more accurately, I will be the new host of an established monthly show. I will be the new host of San Diego's version of Nerd Night, which is a national program. I had the honor of coming in and speaking at the San Diego Nerd Night a couple months ago, which I absolutely loved. We actually had a few Science Faction fans show up to that. I will now be the host of San Diego's Nerd Night. I'm not taking over the entire night completely. That will still be done by the very capable Lauren Chen, but I will be helping out and doing the hosting stuff and trying to sneak some dirty dick jokes in every once in a while. So if you guys want to come out and see me do live science stand-up, I'll throw a few jokes in there in the beginning and at the intermission and whatnot. Come on out. It's the first Tuesday of every month at 6:30. For now, it is at 32 North, which is 8655 Production Avenue. It's in the North County in San Diego. It is a $10 ticket, and their tagline is, it's like the Discovery Channel with beer. So basically, we have three scientists come out every night. Each one gives about a 20-minute presentation about something super interesting. One of the other ones I heard it described as was a less pretentious TED Talk, which I think is a great tagline. You come out, they give a 20-minute presentation about something they're an expert in, and then there's Q&A. It's really fun. It's super interesting. If you like TED Talks, if you like science, if you want to see
what's
going on.
History Channel, TLC.
No. No, don't go chasing waterfalls, Damian. If you want to come out and see something that is really interesting, really science-based, learn something, learn about research that's going on in your hometown right now, come on out to Nerd Night. Even if you're not in San Diego, look up the Nerd Night nearest you and go out to it. It is really fun. Come out and get drunk with a bunch of smart people. Just have fun with people who are like yourselves. If you are listening to this show right now, this is a live event for you.
Well, one, that sounds awesome, and I need to start going to those. And two, people, fans of Nerdy Nights, also encourage San Diego people to, this Thursday, there's another Two Scientists Walk Into a Bar event that the Fleet Science Center puts on. So if you're around, you should go to those, because they're great fun and also involve booze and science.
Yes, and I do those a couple times a year, so you're periodically likely to run into me there. And I'll be the one who's talking way more. They pair you up. There'll be two scientists, and they'll put them in a bar. And their idea is you just come up and talk to them and ask questions. And I'm always the guy who's talking way more than the poor motherfucker they put me with, who's like, I study physics.
I'm waiting for the rest of the setup. Two scientists, a rabbi, and a priest walk into a bar, and?
Yeah, I'm always the one who's just like totally overshadowing the other guy, and then I always end the exact same way, where I turn to the other guy and go, sorry, and then walk away, and it's just...
You spill your beer on him?
Yeah, it's like, I came out for nothing. This asshole, this archaeologist asshole just sat here yelling the entire time. But no, very, very fun events. Coming out, do live science stuff, guys. I can't tell you how much fun it is to be on both sides of that, because I go out to these events. It is really, really fun. You'll learn a whole bunch. And more importantly, you just get to be around people who are kind of like yourself, and it's really fun.
You also get exposed to a lot of different psychological states in people.
That's
I get
true.
A lot of questions about healing crystals and things like that.
Yeah.
So you can clear up misconceptions and also deal with the Dunning-Kroger effect a lot.
Yep, and every once in a while, punch a guy in the face. All right, let's move right on to science. Articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Are you going to answer my question about amethyst or not, by the way, Dr. Troy? Just ignore him. Just like at the other night, you just turned around and walked away.
No, they won't heal that horrible STD you have, we talked about earlier.
I've been rubbing gems all over it. Here, hold these gems.
Gems is another word for rabbits and sheep. All right. On to article number one, semi-identical twins.
Is that what happens when one identical twin in a set just gets beat up really badly?
Why would that make them semi-identical twins?
Because if you got fucked up in the face, you're no longer identical. How much must I disfigure you till you're no longer till you're a fraternal twin?
I thought it was the rejected Bud Light commercial slogan. In semi-identical twins!
Beat you so hard your DNA changes.
Well, so you want semi-identical twins. Like, TV sitcoms have let us know of the potential danger of dating twins.
Yes.
You get them mixed up.
Yeah.
You don't know which one. You want something to tell them by.
Right, and there's at least one case where a identical twin, I remember seeing this identical twin committed murder, and they couldn't figure out which one it was, because identical twins essentially have the same DNA, and so they couldn't distinguish which one had done it.
They had to shoot them both.
Yeah. So what exactly is a semi-identical twin? So those of you guys who probably know this already, but just a quick review, a fraternal twin is basically just like a brother. So the
You have to pledge. I mean, you have to make it through the pledge process to be part of the fraternal order of twins.
Exactly. And then you become a brother. So basically what happens is the mother releases two eggs at the same time, and both of those eggs get fertilized by two separate sperm. It's the exact same thing as having a regular brother or sister, and you can have, you know, the same sex or opposite sexes. It's the exact same thing as having a regular brother or sister. You just happen to be born at the same time.
But share a fucking birthday.
Yeah, that too. You share 50% of your DNA with that person. You share about half with your mom and about half with your dad, and statistically that works out that usually you share about half with a sibling. By the way, side note, something that always gets put out there and I think is total bullshit, but apparently a quack doctor told them this when they were younger. The Olsen twins are supposedly fraternal twins. They are absolutely exactly alike.
Unless they were having cosmetic surgery on those babies at a very young age, I doubt that claim.
It's BS, but it's because they used to kind of do it by like, oh, you've got your own amniotic sac or you don't. And so maybe some doctor when they were born fucked it up, but they're definitely identical. But you'll see online everywhere. Look it up right now. They are down officially as fraternal twins.
They just have a very inbred family.
They're all the same.
Yeah.
Identical twins, however, start off as the same individual. So, you know, you start off and your cell division starts going and you go from one cell to two to three to four. And what happens is somewhere in there, there becomes a little rift, and slowly that division actually pops apart, and now you actually have two replicating individuals, but with the exact same DNA. As they get bigger and bigger and bigger, you can then have multiple babies. And this doesn't just have to be twins. This can be triplets or quadruplets or whatever. But basically, it's one person going all multiple man and becoming two separate people.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize identical twins are clones.
Yes.
And in fact, they're more clones than like if you did it in the lab by virtue of them sharing the same womb environment and growing up at the same time.
Yeah.
They're naturally going to be more similar than if you made a clone later.
Because they'll have similar epigenetic changes as genetic changes. Exactly.
Now, I know with exponential growth, it doesn't matter as much. But once you do that split, you've essentially divided your forces.
Yes. Are you asking if they're going to be smaller?
What percentage smaller are you than whatever your potential was?
Well, your potential is based on your genetics, right? So you're going to grow to that regardless. I don't think going from like 8 cells to 4 cells really matters.
So there's no disadvantage to diversifying funds.
There is a disadvantage, which is that you are less likely to survive as an infant because obviously, pregnancy with multiple fetuses is much more dangerous for the mom and the babies.
And at a certain point, you have to do combat against yourself and survive.
Right.
You should be evenly matched, but...
So fraternal twins run genetically. Identical twins is like a fluke. Like, there's nothing you can do about that. That just, you know, it's a weird thing that happens where the one embryo splits into two. But fraternal is a thing where it runs through the mom's lineage, and if the mom is more likely to put out two separate eggs, that's a genetic predisposition. And so there's actually differing rates of twinnedness when you look at fraternal twins in different ethnic groups.
I'm sorry, as a Latino and mestizo, or person of the New World, who also has like four sets of twins just on his mom's side of the family, I refuse to believe that.
And it is really interesting because like some groups have almost no fraternal twins, or it gets very, very low, and some groups have very, very high ones. Interestingly, especially because we think of the inability to get pregnant later on in life, the older women get, they get way more likely to have twins. Way more likely. And we think it's because basically their ovaries are confused and like, fuck it, just get rid of these eggs, toss them out.
Yeah, women in my family spit out eggs like a fucking minigun on a kind of fucking air gunship. You have to try hard not to get sperm on them.
So bottom line, fraternal twins, 50% DNA, same as brother or sister. Identical twins, 100% DNA, the same. That is the same as a clone. Now, this is something very, very different. This discovery is of a group of semi-identical twins in which they got the exact same DNA from their mom, but different DNA from their dad. And what they realized is this happened because two sperm impregnated the same egg. So you might think, wait a second, don't you get the same DNA from your mom, even if it's your brother or sister? No, you get half of her DNA statistically, and it won't be the same half that your brother or sister get unless you're an identical twin. It's just a statistical thing. You get half from your mom, half from your dad, but it's never going to be the exact same half, or would be very statistically unlikely to be that. In this case, they did. They got the exact same DNA from their mom and different DNA from their dad, so that these two individuals are actually 78% related. Now, you might say, wait, shouldn't it be 75? You got to remember, these are statistical. There's a range there, so you might as well just round that to 75. But basically, they both got the exact same DNA from their mom and completely different DNA from their dad.
That 78% still won't stop the meaner one of the two when they get older from referring to his brother as his only his half-brother.
This one, they were two different genders, so it wouldn't be that, because they got one Y and one X, so the dad contributed one of each. And so they've discovered this because the mom's ultrasound at 6 weeks showed a single placenta. So they looked at it, and they're like, all right, there's one baby forming. And the positioning of the amniotic sacs indicate that she was expecting identical twins. So they basically said, they looked at it, and they go, okay, you're having twins. We could tell that. And because there's only one amniotic sac, it means you're having identical twins. But then they popped out, and one was a boy and one was a girl. And they're like, this does not make any fucking sense. How can you have identical twins and one's a boy and one's a girl?
You can actually have twins that are half siblings. It's called the superfecundation. Yes. And that's when the female releases two eggs and gets fertilized by sperm from different sex sessions with different dudes.
Yes, what we call the cuckold brothers.
Does that mean that the second guy had really fast swimming sperm and the first guy had really slow swimming sperm? Like, don't they kind of have to arrive at the finish line at the same time?
No, not if there's two separate eggs, because those eggs don't even technically have to be released at the exact same time, and they have to get to the place where they can be fertilized. Remember, it doesn't happen in the ovary. Hopefully it doesn't. And so you have to get them to travel down there, and a lot of times they're both ovaries will each release an egg. And so it's just one guy went down the right hallway, one guy went down the left hallway, and they both made it.
Like Plinko. That's how eggs fall down a fallopian tube, I believe, like a Plinko.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty scientific. So the question is this the first time we've ever seen it? And the answer is no, but it's only the second time, at least the second time we ever have known to have seen it. Now, keep in mind, this could have happened before numerous times throughout history, and we wouldn't have known because we were not doing genetic studies, and we also probably didn't have the great ultrasound to be able to say that there was a problem earlier on. And so this could very well have happened numerous times in history and just never resulted in anything. We should say, though, that in realizing this, the researchers for this paper went back, and there's a twins registry where they actually have DNA databases of a set of about 1,000 twins. They went back and looked at those individuals and were able to prove that, no, all the fraternal twins in this registry are 50% related, so we know that none of these are semi-identical. So therefore, at least as far as we can tell, with all the records that we have, this is only the second time we've ever seen it in a scientific context.
What are the most swinginest cultures around? That's where you're probably going to see the most of this, right? The cultures where there's dude involved inseminating.
This is one dad inseminating one egg with two different sperm.
Where did he get the other sperm from?
You know you'd have more than one sperm, right?
Bobby, I'm going to be honest with you. A lot of things about this conversation are blowing me away. I drop one sperm, she drops one egg. Sufficient.
So what's interesting is there does seem to be some health complications with this. In the terms of the one that we saw previously, which was in 2007, the reason they came to the doctor's attention in the first place was one of them had ambiguous genitalia. And then on looking at the investigation, they found mixed chromosomes. And the doctors found that the boy and the girl were identical on their mother's side, but shared around half of their paternal DNA, which is obviously what we see here. In this case, it does look like there was also an issue. I think there was an amputation of one of the legs of one of the kids. So there seems to be some genetic abnormalities, because basically, if you imagine what's happening here, you have one egg, two sperm impregnated. Now, normally what's supposed to happen and what likely does happen when this happens frequently is the embryo just is not viable. That can't survive. There's some kind of chromosomal abnormality. It dies. Now, what's happened here, I think, is the same process that happens in identical twins happens in one of these embryos that otherwise wouldn't be viable. Normally, an embryo goes from one cell and then multiplies out and just becomes one baby, right? But we just talked about some percentage of the time that embryo gets big enough and then splits in two and becomes two identical babies. Normally, a single egg gets fertilized by two sperm. There's too many chromosomal abnormalities. The thing just dies. It cannot function. But in this case, just the right series of events happens where that happened, and it was split at the right time so that it essentially became two different people. However, there's still some complications in that. And somewhere in there, either the chromosomes kind of didn't split the right way, or maybe somebody got a little bit of somebody else's chromosomes, or something happened whereby at least one of these two children in both cases that we know of had some type of chromosomal abnormalities that made them, let's just say, have a difficult time in life.
Yeah, when you read the paper, it's really interesting. They're not 100% sure the exact mechanisms by which this happened, yeah, but they think, you know, the simultaneous insemination by two sperm, one, that alone is really unlikely to happen.
Yes.
And then the maternal DNA in the egg just happened to be duplicated, and so they think it formed this tripolar spindle body and split into there were three different unique organisms developing in the egg, but one had just the dad's DNA. Yeah. It was, you know, like parthenogenic just for the dad.
Wouldn't it have been crazy if that clone popped out of the dad?
Yeah. That's not viable. So they think that one just died, and then the other two were able to persist and then subsequently go through a twinning event. And so a lot of different unlikely circumstances had to come together.
It was one of those, you know, one in a million times one in a million times one in a million, which is why we don't see it.
Yeah. And, you know, potentially this happens maybe more frequently than what we're seeing in live births, but it's just you get way too fucked up and that you don't have viable offspring when you actually have a pregnancy like this.
Right. And who is to say how many times, like you said, this happens, and then it's just, you know, it's one day off. That twinning event is one day off, and because of that, too many chromosomes got swapped and now the whole thing doesn't work, or they're just not quite compatible. And the other two, and you just described a situation in which one of the organisms died off, the other two die off, and it just becomes a normal birth and we don't think about it.
I have two questions, and we're going to have to take a step back. When you use the term ambiguous genitalia, is that just genitalia that plays coy, that doesn't answer your questions, that isn't direct, is always evading?
Yeah, like, I could say that.
Like Dr. Troy is when I ask about amethyst and STDs. And two, was the person who is interviewing this child's ambiguous genitalia immediately arrested?
Just screaming at it, "What are you?"
Answer my question.
I like to think it's a guy who's like in an early 1970s police interrogation room with a light swinging back and forth.
"Chief, we're not allowed to interrogate him without his parents present. I need a confession."
Very interesting, and kind of one of those things that broadens our understanding of biology. You know, if you were to bring up this idea in 2007 before it was first discovered, hey, you can have semi-identical twins, anybody with any knowledge of biology would laugh at you and explain to you why it was physically impossible and why you were an idiot. But every once in a while, we realize that we get proved wrong by kind of the situations that we're in. And this is one of those times. So it's super interesting to see new things come around. You know, again, this isn't something that got created in a lab. This is a natural occurrence. This isn't the result of some crazy in vitro process. There are natural things going on around us that we still don't understand. Even something as super well studied as human birth, you know, something that has been at one of the origins of science for a very, very long time, you can still get these weird surprises, which is one of the really interesting things about science. It's not that you are always right with what you know. The interesting things are when you get proved wrong.
I am very not right that I now know about ambiguous genitalia.
That's true. All right, on to article number two. Herbalist jailed for a boy's death.
Did he strangle the boy after selling him herbs? Or is his profession as an herbalist related to his profession as a child murderer?
It is. It actually is. So it's actually a pretty sad story. The story overall starts in Los Angeles with 13-year-old Edgar Lopez, who suffered from type 1 diabetes. If you guys remember, type 1 is the kind you're born with. Type 2 is the one where you have too much Entenmann's. So this is not this kid's fault. I just like to point that out. You know, so not that diabetes is necessarily your fault if you get it. There's some genetic predispositions and stuff. But I always do like to point out, when you just use the term diabetes, we need a different word for type 1 diabetes. Because one of those you're just fucking born with. Your pancreas sucks. It's not your fault. Like, the other one, you had a little bit of a choice in the matter, you know?
Like, in one of them, your hero is like Jay Cutler, a man who fought through his disability to become a shitty quarterback, but at the NFL level.
Yeah.
And the other one, your hero is like Paula Deen.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it'd be the equivalent of if you see a guy and he's missing an arm, right? And he's either a congenital defect or like he just loves reaching into wood chippers. You know, like this, you feel a different level of sorry for those two people.
We actually talked on this show because I did have some sympathy. Like, hey, maybe you weren't educated. You made a lot of bad decisions when you were younger. but now you have type 2 diabetes. But we talked on the show that a substantial percentage of type 2 diabetes cases could be eliminated and reversed just by fasting for 4 days.
Yeah.
4 fucking days, and you could get rid of this condition and keep your...
And they didn't discover it till like 2016, which meant that for 100 years of type 2 diabetics being able to survive on some form of insulin or proto-insulin, nobody thought to stop eating for a few days.
But you also hear it here. If you're a family member, especially like a controlling one, and if they can't move around too well thanks to the diabetes, you could force a cure upon them.
So anyway, he had the misfortune of having not only type 1 diabetes, but his mother attend one of the talks of herbalist Timothy Morrow. And his mom was intrigued, and he brought Edgar in to see Morrow, who advised them to stop giving Edgar his insulin, which he labeled as poison, and to instead start administering lavender oil, which he conveniently sold through his herbal website.
It was God's insulin, I believe, was the term he used.
Yes, he had that was a different thing that he was – it was also another BS thing called God's insulin. Yes, he had a few different herbal remedies that he was prescribing for this kid.
Well, I mean, like, if you're going to market to dumb people, pull out all the – use all the buzzwords. God.
What's interesting to me about this, what I don't get – so here's the thing. I'm obviously not a proponent of alternative medicine or anything like that, but I do understand the people who are like, I have the last stage pancreatic cancer. I'm in the middle of dying. I'm in chemo. It's not working. I'll take St. John's wort or whatever the fuck you want me to take because nothing else is working. I'm still going to keep taking my medicine, but I'm going to die either way. I might as well roll the dice. This is a controllable condition, and the insulin works just fine, right? Like, there's no reason for this to be a problem. You are not in a dire situation. There's a problem, and there's a cure right in front of you.
That's the big problem with alternative medicine. You know what you call alternative medicine that works?
Medicine. Yeah.
And like, that's why Steve Jobs died, because he was like, I have pancreatic cancer and maybe it's treatable, but no, I'm going to go do some healing homeopathy bullshit.
And when they found his, it was treatable. Like, he could have gotten treatment. And not only that, he's like, I'm going to switch to an all fruit diet. It's like, that's just going to make things worse, you asshole.
I'll be more regular.
This is one of these sad cases. Keep in mind this entire time, direct this anger at the herbalist and maybe a little bit towards his mom, but this is not this kid's fault. He is 13 and he is not making these choices.
Now, when I first heard about this, I was super pissed at the mom.
Right.
I mean, because the kid didn't die overnight. And not only that, but he was asking for the insulin. The kid, he was like, my mom's an idiot. She's murdering me. Give me the goddamn insulin. But my question is this. As somebody who's a pet owner, which is practically a parent.
Mm-hmm. Pet owner and pedo. So either way.
Thank you. Thank you for – I do need to legally remind the audience every day before we start.
Stop yelling at children's ambiguous genitalia and you won't get on these lists.
Got to do what the heart wants. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the price of insulin is through the roof right now. How much of an economic decision is – like, for example, if my dog got cancer and it was going to be $15,000 –
yeah.
At what point is it like, well, I can always get another dog?
Yes. I think for type 1 diabetes, that's 100% covered by medical insurance. So I think he's probably fine in terms of cost.
We need Medicare for all.
Well, believe it or not, in a not at all shocking turn of events, Edgar quickly became ill and could not keep food down. And he began losing weight while also having trouble breathing and maintaining his body temperature. And eventually he started literally begging for the insulin. The mom at that time called up Morrow asking if she could take him to the hospital or call 911. And he said no, that Edgar would be killed if he went to the hospital.
By me, if you take him to the hospital.
I'll be waiting at the front door. So unfortunately, that young boy at 13 passed away in what was undoubtedly extreme pain. This is not a pleasant way to go. So dying of type 1 diabetes is not at all pleasant. And that kid suffered for a long time in very poor circumstances before he died.
In extreme ketosis, which, as I understand, when it builds up really high, like, you kind of smell like shit. Like, you don't smell good.
Yeah, well, it's not just that, but part of his organs started failing, and that's a very painful process to go through. Eventually, when the cops came and figured out what went on, the mom ratted out on this guy. The guy went on trial. He did indeed get convicted for practicing medicine without a license and for endangering a child, and he went to jail. You'd expect, you know, what, 20 years for that? I mean, it's pretty callous. You know, the bad advice is one thing, but then telling him that if you take him to the hospital as he's dying, that he'll be killed, that almost sounds like murder to me. I'd give him 20 or so. 4 months. 4 months this guy goes into jail.
I don't know. To me, I think the mom bears a lot more responsibility. And the dad, by the way, who, as I understand, were married and they lived in the house. Like, how much of a hands-off parent are you? Shut that kid up. If I have to go back there and knock him out again.
Yeah, and the only thing we can hope is that because Moro is 84 years old, maybe it'll end up being a life sentence. Like, maybe he'll end up dying in those 4 months. That's the only sweet justice that would happen. What I would love is if he gets to jail, his first day, he's like, oh, man, jail, this is going to be a hard 4 months. And he's like, so ask one of the guards, when's dinner come around? Dinner's poison for you, man. You can't do that. But here's some lavender oil if you want to just rub this on yourself. Dinner's going to kill you, but just rub this lavender for the next 4 months and not an ounce of food for you.
If I were you, I'd use that lavender oil as a lube. You should be smelling downstairs from all the action you're going to be getting from all the science convicts.
Maybe he'll use his time in prison to reform himself and do a lot of research and realize that these lavender oils are bullshit and he should have been prescribing amethyst crystals. And that totally would have worked. Not for your STD, though. STDs, though, Damien.
No, that is lavender oil.
You need a different crystal for that.
Amethyst to treat STDs. That's a sapphire thing.
So I think when I see these stories, I always think to myself, what is this? So is this... Does this guy really believe in this? Like, is he really so entrenched in the idea that he has to tell other people and he's trying to help? Is that really what's going on? There is a possibility that that's the case. But I feel like even if you're super confident in that, there comes a point where that kid is dying where you say, no, just take him to the fucking hospital. And if you say, okay, is he just trying to make a profit, right? Because he got the people to go to his website and buy his shit. You know, he's a viral marketer. Is that why he's doing it? I don't think that's it either, because I don't think as that's going on, you're really worried about the next thing of lavender oil because that kid's going to die. And so I don't think it's the money. I actually have a separate theory. I think it is the same thing that we see with what they call angels of mercy killers, who are usually doctors or nurses who will go on and kill a lot of their patients. Now, there's a public misperception that this is done as literally an angel of mercy. They're doing it because the person's in pain. Most of the time, these are basically sociopaths, or they're just like serial killers who can't bench press anything, and so they don't want to have a physical altercation. And so they end up excusing themselves in their own heads, for being able to kill these people by saying they're doing it for mercy, but they're not. They have a desire to kill somebody, and so they go in and they, you know, spike the IV bag of one of these patients, and the patients die. And sometimes these people go on. There are cases of some of these people who kill 70, 80 different patients, some of which are not in any kind of fatal situation. They're in there to get their tonsils out and they end up dying on the table because these angels of mercies come. And those people are now being seen as just a different type of serial killer. I think that might be this guy, because after the trial got publicized, somebody else came out and basically said, yeah, my husband was dying of terminal cancer and the guy told him to get off the chemo, get off the drugs, you know, and start doing some herbal medication, and my husband died. You know, I think he may be a guy who gets off on the power, just like other serial killers, gets off on that godlike ability to give and take life like other serial killers, and who basically does not have empathy for other people and uses them like playthings.
Without a joke, I was going to go the serial killer angle as well, but like, I do it in a much more whimsical way than you're very seriously. Like, for example, I think he might be the smartest serial killer ever, because he's essentially done it by proxy. He got somebody else to do all the hard work for him.
Right.
He's minimalized. He got caught and got 4 fucking months in jail.
Yeah, this guy's, that's true.
He got his rocks off, and he did it in the lowest risk way possible.
And you might ask, can the parents be held legally accountable? I think they should be. They're not being held legally accountable, but I think they should. There's an argument, well, they accepted this guy's authority, and you know, they thought they were doing what's best. But at some point, you got to kind of be like, the fact that you're following a dumb idea should be punished. You know, the fact that you decided this dumb idea was better than all the scientific knowledge that we currently have that's keeping your son alive, you should be punished.
Yeah, as someone who was born and raised in LA, I'm not as quick to dismiss the possibility that this guy was just a fucking idiot.
Like, yeah.
I guess the Could mom be. Of this kid was. And, you know, there's a lot of credence lent to crystal healing and these things that have no evidence whatsoever. And this is a psychological thing in humans, the Dunning-Kroger effect, where people who are less informed are much more confident in their choices.
But those people also tend to crumble when the shit hits the fan, right? Like, once you're like, this kid is dying, after he dies, the cops are going to be called. Like, you have to kind of really be into something different to go to that level.
Yeah, that's some real confidence in your bullshit you're like, no, don't, just let him die.
And you have to ask, have we seen this before? And we have. And one of the biggest examples, one of the most controversial examples, is that Jehovah's Witnesses will frequently not allow their children to get blood transfusions because that's against their beliefs, and their kids will die from very easily treatable things. You know, they have surgery or something else, or they get an accident, they have massive blood loss, and they are viewed as martyrs when they die for this particular cause. And I think we should prosecute them too. I think if you allow your kid to die for your own crazy ass beliefs, you don't get kids and you should probably be in jail.
Yeah, religion should not be a pass for stupid beliefs.
Right.
Absolutely.
And then you have to ask one step further. Could you do this for anti-vaxxers? Could you prosecute an anti-vaxxer if their kid dies? Or, you know, could somebody start suing Jenny McCarthy and Jim Carrey for their bullshit propaganda that's led to measles outbreaks throughout the United States and Europe? Can you at some point say you have an obligation? Now, it gets hairy because everybody has the right to an opinion. And Jenny McCarthy has never claimed to be a doctor. But she is spreading crazy anti-vax bullshit. And people have died because of that crazy anti-vax bullshit. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody brought a civil suit sometime in the near future against anti-vaxxers when their kid dies and basically saying, listen, you had these people coming from authority. I mean, you could certainly imagine this going on with Andrew Wakefield, who, by the way, is now a multimillionaire who's dating a supermodel. You could have people...
Is it Jenny McCarthy?
No, it is not. You could theoretically have people suing Wakefield and saying, you committed fraud, knowingly committed fraud because you were coming out with a competing vaccine and so you wanted to try and get rid of the vaccine industry, and you knowingly committed fraud that has killed thousands of people, including my kid. I took your word for it. You were a doctor. You should be held liable. And I think that might be coming. So I think the only way to keep this from happening again is to continue to prosecute people like this. Also, don't let them get off with 4 months. Also, by the way, right now, Los Angeles County prison system, we are counting on you to make an example and make this 4 months a life sentence. So please.
We're too busy beating the shit out of Cosby right now. Call us back.
No, he's in Philadelphia. He's nowhere near LA. He's fine. Get your stuff together. Make this 84-year-old man a, let's just make an example out of him.
Don't use the lavender oil as lube. Make a try.
Actually, I heard one of the best cures for the prison blues you get is to be beat by a sock full of doorknobs. So
where are they getting the doorknobs?
All right. Thank you guys so much for joining us for Science Faction 306, where you learned about the origins of psychology, what semi-identical twins are, and how an herbalist was just jailed for a boy's death. Thank you so much for joining us. Please check me out at Nerd Night the first Tuesday of every month at 32 North Brewing. And come on back this Thursday for Science Faction 307.
Two things we don't tolerate in here. Killing kids and pseudoscience.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.